All right, so today we are in Be Set Apart, Part 11. Okay, now, some of you who are new online are thinking, 11? I'm like 10 parts behind. How am I going to understand what's going on? You'll be fine. It'll be good. All right, so let's start off. We're in Ephesians chapter 5, which is where we left off last. Ephesians chapter 5. And as we go through, I'll bring back some of the context from the other chapters because it's going to be important that we have all that. But in chapter 5, I'm going to reset starting in verse 15, okay? In verse 15. So he says, actually, we go to verse 1 where he says, become then imitators of Elohim as beloved children. So we're doing this from the point of view of imitating him. And then verse 15, it says, see then that you do this imitating, this walking, exactly, not as unwise, but as wise. You see, again, he's hitting points over and over again that are connected, right? He first says, become imitators, and now he's telling you, walk exactly. So this imitating has to do with how we walk, the things we do, the way we live, all right? He says, so walk exactly, not as unwise, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are wicked. We talked about that last week. He says, so then do not be foolish, but understand what the desire of Elohim is, what the desire of Yahweh is. Do not be drunk with wine, in which is loose behavior, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to each other in psalms and songs and of praise and spiritual songs, singing and striking the strings in your heart to the Master, giving thanks always for all to Elohim the Father in the name of the Master, Yeshua, Messiah. Now, he has been through this journey with the Ephesians here. He starts off in chapter 1 saying, hey, guys, I'm proud of you. I've heard all kinds of good things about you, etc. Then he goes through this, but by the way, don't forget, you were dead. You had no future, no hope. You had nothing because you were busy walking according to the rule of the authority of the air, etc. In chapter 2 and verse 2, you know, we drop down. And he says in verse 12 that at that time you were without Messiah, excluded from the citizenship of Israel and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no expectation and without Elohim in the world. But now in Messiah, you're brought near. And so there's this restoration and redeeming you out of this darkness of being dead, being pulled out of the grave, so to speak. And then we get to chapter 3. And he starts talking there about some of the battles that we deal with and some of the things that are going on. And we get to chapter 4 and he says, look, I want you to walk worthily of the calling. And in order to do all these things, there are going to be men to help you. There's an authority structure. There's a vertical structure. It includes apostles and prophets and teachers and shepherds, okay, and evangelists. Just these five roles that are there. Now, he then says that they're there to help us until we all come into unity, the unity of belief and of knowledge. So it's not just information, but the belief and the knowledge of Messiah. And that through that belief and knowledge, we all also come into the fullness of the completeness of the stature of Messiah. That's a tall order. That's a big task. And so, yeah, we're going to need help getting there. And so with that in mind, he then gets us through all the way to chapter 5. And he says, look, become imitators then. This is part of how we're going to do this. He says, don't do all this other nonsense. Don't let people deceive you with empty words, verse 6. Don't become partakers with them. You were once darkness, now you are light. Walk as children of light, verse 8. Proving what is well-pleasing to the Master, verse 10. Okay? So now he's saying, redeeming the time, etc., etc. We're going to now get to verse 21, where he says, after telling us to give thanks always to Elohim, he says, subjecting yourselves to each other in the fear of Elohim. Okay, subjecting yourselves to each other in the fear of Elohim. So what does it mean to subject yourself? The context is in the form that Yahweh desires. In other words, the context is that he wants you to do things in the form that Yahweh desires. So what does it mean to subject yourself? So subject means to be under one's control or jurisdiction. Okay? It also has to do with submitting, which is to accept or yield to a superior force or authority or will of another person. It has the understanding of being subordinate or to be lower in rank or position than. And so he's saying, look, subjecting yourselves to each other in the fear, awe, reverence of Elohim. Okay, the deep respect. So out of deep respect for the ultimate authority, we're going to subject ourselves to each other. And when he says subjecting yourselves to each other, he's not saying that I subject myself to you and you subject yourself to me. See, that's what you want to read. That's what Christianity told you. Well, everybody has to subject yourself to it. So you to me, me to you. Well, then there's no vertical. There's no, what is that? He's saying is everybody needs to be subject to whom they're subject to and understand their authority role to those who they have authority over. In other words, understand your position and your role. That's what he means by subjecting yourselves or submitting yourselves one unto another. Because he just described throughout the whole of Ephesians to this point, vertical structure. The need for it, what it looks like, what it does for you, how it works. I mean, not every detail, but that's the essence of what's going on here, right? And so I want to skip verse 22 where it talks about wives, and then it talks about husbands just for a second. We'll get to all that. But I want you to understand that it's all there because remember he's talking about subjecting yourselves, verse 21, onto each other. Why? He says, verse 30, because we are members of his body and of his flesh and of his bones. Okay? He says, this is the great secret, verse 32, but I speak concerning Messiah and the assembly. So he's now going to talk about husbands and wives as a picture, as a metaphor, but a picture of his relationship with the body. So if I don't say that first, and we just start off with wives, subject yourselves to your own husbands. But you have no context for that. The context is he wants you to know what it should look like because it's a shadow of how we are to be with him. So when we read the rest of this chapter here, I want the men, because you guys all want to go, wives, see what it says, wives? Wait a minute, are you acting like Messiah? Are you being the good shepherd? Are you providing and protect? See, it's all predicated on wives, do this if your husband's doing that. Not so much if, but you understand? The understanding is the men are supposed to be doing too. And it's going to tell you that when it gets to the men's part, when it says, husbands, love your wives. But let's understand all of this is we as the assembly are expected to behave a certain way towards Messiah. Messiah as the head is expected to behave a certain way towards the assembly. The roles are hopefully fairly clear on that. Where it doesn't get so clear is when we then take it into husband and wife. But yet the husband is expected to be making an effort to be Yeshua-like as Yeshua was towards the assembly, and the wives expected to be assembly-like as the assembly was towards Yeshua. Now, we have a little bit of an easier time with the assembly Messiah thing because he is Messiah and he is perfect. Your husband is not, okay? There are no perfect husbands. But there aren't any perfect wives either. So we all make the effort. And so he's trying to give us this picture. But all of this was to explain not about husbands and wives. He wasn't really talking about that. He says, this is the great secret about the relationship of Messiah and the assembly. He says, that's what he's trying to explain to everybody. So now let's go back to verse 22. So he just told us to be subject to each other. In other words, submit to each other, understanding your vertical position. Because if others are submitting to you, you know what that means? That you have this huge burden of responsibility for whoever is supposed to submit to you. Because there's two roles there. The submission comes out of awe, respect, and trust. Belief that they should trust you, that will all be good if I trust you and place myself under your authority. And men, you need to understand that and take that and own that, like seriously, that if you want your wives to behave a certain way, are you trustworthy? Are you going to take care of them? Are you going to provide for them? Are you going to be like Messiah to the assembly? Don't just look at them. Remember the plank and the twig? Remember the mirror you're supposed to look in? James tells us, look in the mirror of the Torah. All right. So he says, wives, subject yourselves to your own husbands as to the master. So now he's talking vertical here. So he says, subject yourself to your husbands. No, he says, subject yourselves to your own husbands. In other words, don't give authority that's not properly in your vertical. Are we clear on that? Because you may be listening to men that are not in the proper vertical above you. Women, it says, wives, you listen to your own husband. And ladies, never, ever. Men don't do this either, but ladies do this a lot. Don't compare your husband to any other man. You will be doing them a tremendous disservice because you'll be comparing your husband, as you know, with all his, you know, warts and everything, to some guy that you've only seen in public at their best moments. You have no idea what that person's really like. Now, maybe they are really that good, but you don't know. So don't compare, because it's an unfair comparison. Because you're basing your comparison based on a tremendous amount of information about your husband and almost nothing about the other guy. And that's not a fair comparison. Guys, don't do that to your wives either. Okay? Don't do that to them either. Well, you know, so-and-so's wife, blah, blah, blah. You don't know. You don't know what they do when they're not in public. I tell people this all the time. Most of you, okay, I'll go with most, more than half, okay? But most, probably a good amount more than half, are pretty good publicly. I'm not, but most people are. Okay? Right, listen, I'm going to own it. I mean, I'm the same in public or not in public. If I'm upset, you know I'm upset. If I'm happy, you know I'm happy. I mean, it's whatever it is genuine. But some of you, you could be miserable and angry and nobody would ever know because you're great in public image that you put out there. And you and your spouse could be walking around and everybody thinks you're the happiest couple ever, and then we find out you're divorced. Because you're good in public. So ladies, gentlemen, you cannot compare your spouses to people that happen to be good in public. So you just don't know. It's an unfair comparison. So, wives, subject yourselves to your own husbands. As, so what does that mean, as? In the same manner, in like manner, as you would to Yeshua. Or he says here, the master, as you would if you were going in the days where we understood the servant-master relationship, as you would to someone with that level of authority. Except that it's a, look, we are still slaves, but we're slaves to our Elohim, not slaves to Pharaoh. Because we have a good master. A good master who loves and cares for us and gave himself for us everything. So that's what the husband's supposed to be too. Remember, in this comparison, you're supposed to treat your husband as you would to the master with the expectation that your husband's making every effort to be like the master. Now, by the way, ladies, nowhere does it say only do this if he's doing that. And men, it doesn't say you need to do your stuff only if they do their part. Each one of you is accountable to your part with no excuse as to, well, he's not doing this, so why should I? Or she's not doing this, so why should I? That's baby, immature garbage. It needs to just be released. Okay? Let's not do that. He says, wives, subject yourselves to your own husbands as to the master because. So he's going to tell you why. Because the husband is head of the wife. The husband is head. And that word literally means above in authority. It literally means the head in authority. So it's not like there's a translation problem. So he's head of the wife as, so it's not just head like a dictatorial boss or something, but as Messiah is head of the assembly. And he is savior of the body. So men, if you want your wives to see you as head of the wife, then you have to be as Messiah was for the assembly. Now, what was Messiah for the assembly? He redeemed them. He said, take me, not them. I give my life for them. Are you giving of yourself, of whatever's putting your preferences, everything? Are you putting hers first? Are you doing things to take care of her? Or is it all about you? I fall into this trap as much as anybody else. I'm thinking, well, what do I get? What's in this for me? Don't do that, men. Ladies, you could do that a little bit because you were created for that. There's supposed to be a providing and a taking care of. But then don't do that with your children. Don't react all like, well, they're treating me. Look, Don't expect anything from them. In the vertical, whoever's above should be expecting nothing from the below. They're just giving. Okay? So, ladies, you get the same opportunity when you're above. Those in above, men, don't expect anything to come back up. You're only giving. Now, you should be receiving. It says, wives, be subject to your husbands. It's going to tell you to do other things as well. And men, it's going to tell you to do other things as we go through this chapter. Remember, he is the great giver. Does he need anything from us, the Creator? No. Okay, so he doesn't. But what he wants us to do is to become like him, which means that we would become givers. So, but he created us initially to be receivers. We're receptacles of what he has to give. And it goes down the cycle. So he gave it all to Yeshua. Yeshua gave it to the men gave it to the wives, the wives gave it to the children, as it goes through. And you should be looking to receive from above. Right? We look to Yeshua, Yeshua look to the Father, wives look to your husbands, children look to the mothers, and the Father, right? They look to the parents. Don't do it the other way around. Figure out what you can give when you're going down the vertical. How should I properly respect and have reverence and submit myself to the above when I want to receive from the vertical? This is making sense. Okay? So it says here again, wives, do this because the husband is the head, but also you're doing this because it's a metaphor for Messiah and the body and him being Savior. Now, of course, it's talking to the wives here, but I said, men, you need to be paying attention, because if they're expected to do this, it's because you're expected to do that part. Now, verse 24, but as the assembly is subject to the Messiah, so also let the wives be to their own husbands in every respect. There's vertical authority in the assembly. The assembly is expected. What's the covenant that the assembly made? Father, you say it, we'll do it. That's the covenant. It's a covenant of vertical authority. So ladies, when you got married, you said to your husbands, at least you should have, I trust you, and I'm going to give you that vertical authority because I know you will take care of and do the things necessary to provide me with the life that I should have. So then he goes on, he says, wives, do this, be this way to your own husbands in every respect. Every respect. Every aspect of your relationship. Okay? Make sure that you understand that. Then he says, husbands. Now I'm getting on the husbands for a second, although we have been getting on both all along here. Husbands, love your wives. Oh, but I love my wife. Do you love her as Messiah also did love the assembly and gave himself for it? Do you love her on that level? Are you doing that? You know, John 15:13 says, no greater love has one but to give his life for his brother. Give your life. You won't even give her the remote. Ask my wife if I give her the remote. All the time. Anytime she walks in the room, I offer it to her. Hey, would you like to? Yeah, you watch whatever you want. Don't make this about, I'm the head and I'm going to do and I... That's not why you're the head. You know why you're the head? Why is Messiah the head? For himself or for us? For us. He's the head because that blesses and benefits us. You're the head because it's supposed to bless and benefit your wife and your children. Not because it's supposed to do anything for you. He says, but Messiah gave himself for the assembly. Men, love your wives. So when it says he gave himself, what does that mean? What did he say? What was the last words Yeshua said before he died? What did he say? It's done. It's finished. What's finished? The work he came to do. Men, Yeshua for the assembly did the work that he was supposed to do. Men, you need to do the work you're supposed to do. The lady should expect you to do the work that's necessary to be done. Yeshua did not balk from doing any of the things he needed to do. So there's an expectation. Husbands, love your wives. I don't know what that looks like. Well, yeah, you do. as Messiah loves you, as Messiah loves the assembly. Is Messiah patient with you? Merciful? Loving, kind, gentle, all those good fruit of the Spirit things? Are you that way to your wife? A lot of you are not. Now, do these things, husbands, in order to set... This is why Messiah did. Messiah gave himself to the assembly in order to set it apart and cleanse it with the washing of the word. In order to present it to himself, a splendid assembly, not having spot or wrinkle or any sort, but that it might be set apart and blameless. In this way, husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. So what is he saying? He's saying, look, the body, the assembly needed to be set apart, washed by the word, and then be able to be presented a the splendid assembly. We think of like in Revelation, like the bride has made herself ready. But the bride did that with the guidance of the Mashiach, of the bridegroom. The bride didn't just randomly just decide how to make herself ready. So husbands will say, well, it's my job in order to set you apart. Well, through loving her, inspiring her, to motivate her, correcting and guiding where necessary, because you are in the vertical, but with the whole idea of being so that this can be a splendid, right? So it's a splendid wife. He says, men, you ought to love your own wives as your own bodies. Problem is, a lot of you don't even love your own bodies. You don't take care of yourselves hardly at all. So you don't take care of your wives either. Some of you take better care of your cars than you do your wives. Actually, you take better care of your car than you do yourself. Some of you men. Ladies, some of you take better care of your children than you do yourself. Because remember, in the vertical, I could take the same thing and say, wives or mothers as you are with your children, like husbands are for the wives. And you are to give of yourself and to do these things just like men are for you, you are for your children. Because all of this is to provide them with the space, the encouragement to do this part, which says, so that they could have no spot or wrinkle of any sort, that it might be set apart and blameless. In other words, helping the wife, men, to be what Abba had in mind when he made wives, when he made women to be wives. What did he envision that to look like? Not what your culture taught you, not what is because of what time we live in, like in the 2022 era versus the 1022 era or whatever. You know, pick another range of, you know, centuries and things are a little bit different culturally. But what did the Creator have in mind when he decided that there would be a husband and a wife? And he's telling you, he's patterning this for us with the way he interacts with us as the assembly. There's a patterning for us that we can observe. He says, in this ways, husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. So if you don't love your wife, then you don't love yourself. And if you end up hating your wife, then you hate yourself. That's pretty harsh, but it's true. Otherwise, why did you marry her? And ladies, why did you marry him? See, that's the whole thing, is that when if you counseled with me to marry, which not a lot of you all do, but the ones who do, my whole goal is to get you to be clear on what it is you're offering and what you expect. Because in order to get someone to marry you, guys, right, you have to do a little bit of a sales job to say, if you marry me, all of this wonderful stuff is what I planned for us. And the wives either believe you or they don't. And then you should be dedicated to making what you offered happen. Okay? My wife had a nice little list of things that she expected before we got married. And she has all but two of them. And the only reason she doesn't have those two is because she hasn't gone to get them. Okay? She can get them anytime she wants. But all of those things I provided. It took a little while, but I knew what the list was. I agreed to the list when we started. I agreed to a certain type of house, and she wanted, you know, a certain car, and she wanted just some things that she wanted. She wanted to not have to work anymore and at the job she was at. I mean, there's just a bunch of things that were on her list, and I checked all of those boxes. It took a little bit, but I did. I knew that they were important because not only were they important to her, but I agreed to them. I said, I will provide that you can have those things. Sure, a lot of these things are material things, but they're things that she had just envisioned. I knew she wanted a sort of a Cinderella princess wedding, so we rented the nicest place we could, and Cinderella had nothing on our wedding. Okay? Okay? Go look up the Don Cesar Hotel in St. Pete. Okay? It's the biggest pink hotel you can find. It's a historic landmark. It's Cesar, C-E-S-A-R. And, you know, we had a big ballroom with an elevated part that went around the outside where people were, so there was two-tiered, and we had the tables on the floor and all this. I mean, it was because that's what she wanted, and I offered it, and that's how we started. So, I mean, just you need to understand, men and ladies, there has to be that coming to agreement and expectation. Okay? Now, because a lot of you are thinking, as it starts beating on the ladies, especially meaning about submitting yourself to your husband, say, well, you don't know my husband. Well, you picked him. What else to say? But men, if you're having a problem with your women submitting, your wife submitting, are you doing anything to earn the awe, reverence, and respect that they should have for you? Are you doing what you offered them? Are you fulfilling what you committed to? I mean, that's, you know, and by the way, I didn't get there immediately. We struggled quite a bit. At least I did, getting us to where we needed to get. But eventually we got there. But I kept reminding her, I will get you there. And she knew the commitment level was there. And so, you know, now she's living most of that. And could be living all of that. It's just, that's her choice at this point. Okay? Now, continuing here. So we're supposed to be learning two things here. We're learning about husband-wife relationships. We're learning about also the assembly and Messiah relationships. So really the overall thing we're learning is how do things work in the structure? Because you could take husbands and wives out of this mix, make it parent and child. You can make it employer and employee. You can make it anything that's vertically structured. The expectation of the one for the other. Okay, so I'm the head of this organization. You know what that means? I sacrifice more than any of them do. I'm not bragging. It's what my obligation is. If it doesn't get done by anybody else or something needs to get done that's going to inconvenience a bunch of people, I will end up doing it because that's my obligation. Because I understand that vertical, that I will inconvenience myself for you. Or for the staff, or whoever it is. And again, that's not to brag. It should be expected that that's what I would do. That's what it should be going on as part of the vertical. But you should be, men, willing to inconvenience yourselves for your wives, for your children. That's, because it's not about your convenience. It's about you in the role. You know, I don't think it's unfair in Deuteronomy 6, the Ve'ahavta, for Yahweh to expect us to love him with everything. After all, he does that to us. I mean, Yeshua loves us enough that he gave his life so we could have life. What more could you do? And do you think it was convenient to put on a flesh suit and run around in this muck and mud that we have that we live in? And then get murdered for it in a very ugly way, all because of how much he loves us. Husbands, have you communicated that kind of love to your wife, to your children? Or does your wife and your children all think that they don't even want to come to you because you'll just get mad because they're bothering you? And they're all looking at you like, well, I don't want to bother Dad. He's going to get all mad. I don't want to bother my husband because he's just, you know. Where are they in the priority list, and do they know it? That's two pieces that are important, not just one. Because you might say, oh, of course my wife is number one. Yeah, but does she know that? Does she feel it? And wives will say, well, of course my husband knows that I trust him and I submit to him. Well, does he actually know that? You think that he should know that. But does your behavior communicate that? Otherwise, it doesn't work. He says, okay, so in that way, husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. Verse 28, verse 29. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but feeds and cherishes it, as also the master does the assembly. Feeds and cherishes. I mean, do you, if you, I only use an example of like, I've seen men with cars. Okay, not all of you do that. Some of the wives, you haven't seen my husband's car. Okay, but when you have that one thing that you value, whatever that material thing is, it could be, you know, any kind of an item, and you make sure it's clean and polished and kept safe and nobody could accidentally knock and scratch it and this and that and the other thing. Because it's cherished, it's valued. Any of you guys look at your wives that way? Where you're concerned that something might happen to them, might scratch them or get them dusty and dirty or some other thing? Do you check on them to see if they need a little TLC? Because that's watching you guys sit there with that rag and wiping the car down and the TLC that you give to that car. Do you guys do that for your wives? Do they get any of that TLC? Now, every wife's going to need it in a different form. You're going to have to figure out what that is. That's why we do the five love language thing, right? So, you know, some of them are going to need you to give them some physical touch that shows that you love them. Some of them are going to need you to do certain acts of service to show that you love them. Some of them need the words that affirm that you love them. Some of them are going to need some gifts, just little things you can do that show, I value you. And, you know, some of them are going to need quality time. I knew I was leaving one out. Okay, the fifth one. Whatever that looks like to them, not to you. Oh, my wife knows I love her, does she? I tell her all the time. So what? If words isn't what she wants, then the words are not going to do any good. And if your words don't match your actions, they certainly aren't going to do any good. I tell Yahweh I love him all the time, but then you go and do all this dumb stuff that you want to do and ignore him, then he doesn't feel the love. If you love me, do what I said. That's paraphrasing, but that's pretty much what Yeshua said. If you love me, then do what I said. And it's not because I get all filled up by your obedience. It's because I gave you those instructions because they're for you. They're for your benefit. Does your wife know that, man? Does she know that when you make these decisions that they're actually for her? Have you been making the effort to communicate? Or, yikes, what if they're really for you and not for her? See, all these things should be for her. The reason you take on a wife is not just so you can have sex. I mean, some of you might think that as a guy. You think, okay, I'm going to have a wife so I can have sex. No, you take on a wife because you want to take one person in the world and make her that special. You're going to cherish. You're going to care for, provide for. This is your opportunity to be like Elohim or like Messiah to the body. You have that one person that you can give everything to and sacrifice everything for. You weren't thinking that when you were dating and then going to say, I do. You're just thinking, oh, she's pretty and she's cute and I like her company and I want to, you know, enjoy her more than just that and all this other stuff. But you weren't thinking about what you would give for her. See, unfortunately, mostly we're always thinking, what am I going to get? So the wife, in the dating process, the potential wife is looking at the guy. Can he provide? Can he this? Can he that? And they should be evaluating all of that. What am I going to get? Well, women, you know what you should be asking instead? I mean, in addition, but not really instead. But really, more importantly, can I admire this man? Can I look up to this man? Can I respect and honor and reverence this man? Because that's what your role is in the vertical, is to honor, reverence, and respect and submit to whatever's above you. Because you're thinking, does he make enough money to buy me the stuff I want? Is he going to take care of me so I don't have to work? Is he going to do this and this and this and this and this? Let me just settle one little point for all of you. Ladies, you need to work. Now, don't get me wrong. I didn't say you have to make an income necessarily. The men should provide that. The goal should be that the men don't need your income. But nobody does well doing nothing. So all of you ladies, I don't know where you got that from, where society came up with that. Nowhere in Scripture do you see the ladies doing nothing. Read Proverbs 31. Okay. Ishet Chayil, the woman of valor. You know, because some of you are thinking, well, I would just like, you know, my husband to make a living so I don't have to work. No, so you don't have to work for a living. You need to work. I don't know where the original thing, like idle hands and the devil's work, wherever that came from. It's not in Scripture, but I'm just saying is wherever that, it's right, it's true. When you got nothing to do, you get in trouble. So ladies, don't have a goal of sitting home doing nothing. Because that's just going to give you an opportunity to get in all kinds of mess. Everybody should be doing something productively. You need to do something. Now, it could be volunteer work. It could be, I don't care what it is, but be doing something. 6 days you shall work. All right, well, find something to do. I mean, it's funny, too, because I got a bunch of people who are married to wives that sit home all day, and the house is still not clean, and things are still not done. It's like, but you're home all day. What are you doing? Problem is, you were more productive when you had a job and you came home. And then you got things cleaned and done in a much smaller amount of time in addition to the job you went to. How's that possible? Because you had a different mindset, a productive mindset. So he says here, no one ever hated his own flesh but feeds and cherishes it as also the master does the assembly. So feeds and cherishes, so provide what is needed to sustain that woman. And by the way, she needs more than just food. Women have an emotional component that needs to be fed. They need to be fed emotionally, relationally. The time that they want to spend with you, that quality time. Even if quality time isn't their number one, they still want that quality time. They want that emotional connection. Okay? And by the way, all you guys that married for the intimacy physically, she doesn't want to give you any of that if you haven't lit up the emotional part. If you haven't turned the heart into a big smiley face, you don't get access to the rest. Okay? I watched the guy just, he's a Christian relationship guy, does the men and women thing, and he got a big white board up there and he made a big heart. He says, okay, that's that heart, that's the center of emotions. He drew a little circle lower down and said, we'll just call this a happy place. He says, guys, if you don't turn this on, you don't get access to the other one. Ladies will give you access if they feel correct. In other words, they feel good about you and the relationship and loved and valued and cherished and all that kind of thing. So you got to work on, that's the part here. It says, are you feeding and cherishing them? When they feel fed relationally and cherished, they give you everything. And without reservation and with pleasure. They'll be happy to give you all of themselves. But you got to work that first aspect of it. See, guys, you're wired different. You don't need any of that stuff to be wired to go. You're good to go. Even if you're asleep, you're good to go. Some of you are laughing because you've been there. Okay? Okay, our head could be anywhere and we can still be happy to go. Ladies, if their head's not right, they're not really going to be wanting to do any of that stuff. And that comes back to this part. Are you cherishing and feeding them? Feeding their spirit, feeding their growth, feeding them as a woman, feeding them to give them. Remember, Yeshua gives the assembly the guidance and also the space to become what we're supposed to become. Are you providing an environment for that woman you're married to become everything she could become? I don't mean you going like this to her to push her to become something, but are you encouraging and providing the environment to nurture and to promote a space where she can grow into the fullness of what she can become? And ladies, your men are never going to do that for you if you don't spend your time doing the same thing for them, encouraging and nurturing them and providing an environment for them to become the most they can become. So when you're constantly kicking them and telling them what an idiot he is, and how frustrated you are with his inability to do this or that or whatever, that is not an encouraging environment for growth. And by the way, that's the twig and the plank again, because whatever you're attacking him for, I'm sure you're not perfect in your role either. And I know these things because when I counsel husbands and wives, it goes both ways. Each one says, well, you know, he blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, but you, well, okay. You both need to own it. She was right about you. You were right about her. Saying both of you need to fix that. And we all need to learn how to fix this. Otherwise, we're never going to get the vertical right. And the vertical is all about Yeshua and the assembly. He says, because, verse 30, we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. Okay, so we're talking about Messiah, the assembly again. And then he connects it back to the husband and the wife. He says, for this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two become one flesh. So when it says a man will leave his mother and father, what is that saying? When he was with his mother and father, where was the man in the vertical structure? The mother and father were above him. He was under authority. He's going to leave and now be authority and have a wife and children, and now he's at the top. But he has to know how to do that right, like Messiah does for the assembly. So he's leaving mother and father. So by the way, ladies, if you marry some guy and you're gonna live in his mother's house, then you're not doing this. Why would you marry a guy that's still living in his parents' house? And if you're a guy and you're mad at what I just said, well then own it. Man up. Because if you're a man, you're not living in your mother's house. Unless your mother needs you to care for her because she has something physically that needs somebody there to be a caretaker. But if there's nothing wrong with your mother and your mother goes to work, your mother does all the other things, why are you in that house? Because you don't want to grow up yet to take care, because it's cheaper, you're saving money. You know what? Make enough money, you won't need to save money that way. But you got to go out there and plan for that. I don't know how many times I've had to say this. I'm going to say this again for all of you on this teaching too. This is for the men. Men, and ladies, you should know this too when you're evaluating the man you're going to marry. It's not an ideal formula, but it's a very simple formula that basically works, which is, men, you should be looking for a career, an employment of sorts, a way to make a living, whether it's your own business or working for somebody else, that pays you per hour your age. So that by the time you turn 50, because when you're 20, making 20 an hour is not bad. But when you're 50, making 20 an hour is a struggle. Now, if you're making 50 an hour, you're probably okay at 50. Wife, children, colleges you're paying for, and everything else. I mean, it's not an exact formula, but I think it's at least a minimum. I didn't say you should be telling your boss I should be paid my age. No, you need to find a job that pays your age. So if you're in a job that will never pay you more than 25, unless you're planning to stay 25 the rest of your life, you probably need a different career path. I'm making this simple for you. So ladies, when you're evaluating the man, find out where he's planning to go and how he's planning to get there. And if he's not there yet, gauge his commitment level to making it happen. I was doing pretty good at different times, and then it all got taken away several times because that's part of being entrepreneurial, etc. But my wife never doubted I was going to work my you-know-what off to get there and that I was going to get there. And so, ladies, you got to gauge that commitment. You got a man that talks a lot and you're not seeing a whole lot of motion. I don't know if I want to hitch my wagon to that. Okay? Because a lot of guys talk a lot. The guys who are really doing it aren't saying anything. I'm serious. The ones who are really doing it aren't bragging about anything. They're too busy to brag about it. They're getting it done. Okay? You know, we have feasts coming up. I'm just going to give you an example. I try to set the example. We have feasts coming up. You know what that means? A lot more work, a lot more things that have to be handled. So I've left here almost every night around 11 most nights. Everybody else has left. That elder will say, yeah, so you're still in the building at 11 o'clock, 10:30 every night. The stuff to do. And I'm not going to just offload it onto everybody else. I take care of what I need to take care of. I don't want to. It's not my job to then overburden a bunch of other people. It's not that the people that work with me don't work hard, and they do work hard, and they work long hours, and they put in the extra stuff. But I don't have any problem. My wife was here too, and she's doing all of her program, and we were both here till like 11 o'clock. That was like Wednesday night, I think. Okay? I was here Sunday all day, so was she, and that normally you think Sunday's a day off. No, I worked here all day until like 10 o'clock at night, Sunday night. Why? This is stuff that has to get done. Actually, that's not true. There's stuff that has to get done if I want to provide for the assembly. If I want to see my role in the vertical, then it has to get done. If it didn't get done, you guys would be okay. If it gets done, you guys can be better than okay. It provides you with the highest level. You know, I've been talking about a lot of things for years, and I haven't gotten a lot of them done because some more other emergencies pop up. And one of the things I've been talking about for years was coming up with this Torah portion schedule. And I decided a couple of days ago I was going to get it done, and I stayed up here those long hours to crank that out and get it done. Okay? Don't clap for that, because I procrastinated and put that off for 5 years. Okay? Or more. But the thing is, I'm setting the example to tell you, but there's times when you realize I can't keep putting things off. I have to get them done. I mean, I have great excuses. I always had great excuses. But you know what they are? Excuses. That's all they are. They're rational lies. They're rationalizations to, you know, as to how I can justify not doing something that if I would just make the time and get it done. So I did, and that meant I stayed here long hours and just got it done. What are you doing in your life? And by the way, I still spend time with my wife. I still spend time with my daughter, with my son, the time that they need, and I still have the ability to block out time when they come to me and say they need some time. But you waste a tremendous amount of time. And so these relationships don't get done in the vertical the way they need to. Some of you are homeschooling your kids, but are you sacrificing to make sure that instead of taking advantage of them sitting in front of some system that they're learning from, do you go over and check it? Are you watching what they're doing? Do you realize they're going onto websites and getting all the answers that they need? And cheating up a storm and learning nothing? Oh, but I have my own stuff to do. And your point is, we all have our own stuff to do. Ask Elder how often I say no, if ever, right? How often I say no when he asks me if I can take a counseling session. He's the one that says no, because he wants to try to protect my time. I don't think I've ever said no. Why? Because it's not about me, right? Somebody needs, so I stay. Every Saturday night, I stay until there's nobody else that needed help. Or until Elder blocked them off because he didn't want to stay. And again, I'm saying this not to brag at all. This is, I'm trying to show you what the example in the vertical is. If you're the husband, you lead by example. If you're like me, a leader of other people, you lead by example. You're the mother or the parent, you lead by example. You can't expect people to follow if you can't lead. So Yeshua's doing a comparison here. Men, I'm the greatest leader there is, Messiah says, and I treat the assembly a certain way, then men, you want your assembly to treat you a certain way, you need to lead like I lead. And I lead by giving myself for the assembly. That's what Yeshua says. Now, Yeshua doesn't need from the assembly like a husband needs. So that's the one thing that's different. The husband needs encouragement. The husband needs you to believe in him. Yeshua doesn't need you to believe in him. You need to believe in him. But a husband needs you to believe in him. A husband needs to be encouraged. Yeshua doesn't need any encouragement. He's completely at peace in his core strength of who he is. He knows who he is. He knows what's going on. Men have insecurities. Men have weaknesses. Men have pride and egos that are fragile. You need to encourage them. You need to protect that. You need to nurture that. Your man's never going to become what you want him to be if you're not going to believe he can be that. If he can get there, you got to believe he can get there. Now, if the man is strong enough, he doesn't need anybody to believe. He's just going to do it anyway. But that's not most men. So ladies, don't expect that out of your man necessarily. Most men don't have that born in them, that strength to just get it done no matter what. But all men can get there. They just need some encouragement. They need someone to believe in them, to trust them, to respect them. So men, don't just put that all on your wife and say, well, you need to see what you heard Rabbi say. Well, how about making every effort to earn that, to merit that? Go to your wives and say, if you would just believe in me, I will make every effort to get this done. I just need you to trust me, to give me some support and encouragement. I know I'm not getting it done right now. And so, you know, you can't use the excuse, well, I'm not going to do it because she won't support me. She doesn't believe in me. Well, then show her she's wrong and prove her wrong and just go get it done. You got to get it done because it needs to get done. Not because somebody this or that or whatever. You know, before anything got started, the Father and the Son decided everything that was going to play out all the way to the end, including knowing that Yeshua would die. And then he came and he got it done. He did everything he had to do, and then he died, and then he was resurrected. And he's still working like crazy, getting everything else done. He's not just sitting back with the Father going, well, let's let this thing go to hell in a handbasket until then we show up and then rescue the whole deal. There is stuff going on all the time that they're doing. This is, you know, my Father works, so do I. That's what he says, right? Nobody's kicking back. Remember, when they had the 7 days of creation, the seventh day wasn't a rest because he was tired. Right? He didn't need a break. He wasn't worn out after 6 days of making everything. Anybody think Yahweh was tired? No, he decided to make that day special and teach us that that's about taking a break from creating and working in the world to focus on that vertical relationship. So it says here again, verse 31, so this is the reason why men leave their father and mother to be joined to their wife and the two become one flesh. So when it talks about two becoming one flesh, this again, the word there would be echad, for one. This should bring us to John 17, where Yeshua says over and over again, Father, I wish them to be. My desire is for them to be echad as we are echad. For them to be one as we are one. I've got, I don't know, every counseling that I probably do with couples comes down to the same thing. Two cannot walk together without agreeing about how they're going to do it. That's what Yeshua is talking about in John 17. It's what it's talking about here, about a man and a woman becoming one flesh. It's not talking about physically when they get intimate that they become one flesh. It's talking about that they will be echad, of one mind, of one purpose, that they will operate as a unit in sync with each other, in harmony with each other, in agreement with each other. See, a lot of you struggle in your marriages because guess what? You don't agree. But what are you not agreeing on? How are you going to walk everything out? It could be something simple like, you know, how people are handling garbage or how people are leaving seats up or down or toothpaste caps. It could be anything. Raising children, employment, spending money, paying bills. I mean, you're not in agreement about whatever it is. It could be big things. It could be small things. You should be working on getting into agreement with each other because you made an agreement to get married. But nobody told you before making that agreement, you should first make sure you're in agreement. But I want her. I want him. So what? That doesn't assure anything is going to go well in the future. It's like I tell people that tell me they want, they're, people will come and find what we're doing. Their bubble gets popped and they're already dating somebody and that person's either in the world or they're in mainstream Christianity and all of a sudden now they're headed into Torah observance. And I tell them the same thing. I say, do not marry that person at this point. Because if you're going to walk into covenant and they're not, that is a nightmare. I know people that have marriages that are working where one is covenanting and the other isn't. They're not happy, though. Not most of the time. I mean, they're happy-ish. All right? But it's an always present irritation that they're not in agreement. Agreement meaning they're not seeing things the same way and headed in the same direction. The idea of the ox and the donkey plowing is not going to work. You need to both be plowing the same, pulling the same direction. Imagine the same ideas if any of you have ever been in like a rowboat or a canoe. You know, you're stroking along and the other person does a little bit different thing and all of a sudden, you know, you're not going anywhere. You have to be stroking in the same direction together in the same rhythm, etc. One can't be deciding, I'm going to do it at this speed and the other one's doing it at a different speed. That's just not going to work. And so yet, we just run off and get married anyway. And then we wonder why there's 50% plus divorce, because nobody's doing any kind of vetting in the beginning. You just want to be married. You finally find somebody that you think could work. They're interested. You're interested. There, I'm going to get married. Well, that's maybe not the best full criteria for that. You might want to do a little bit more. Then I give you my exercises to do, and you'll go and do them, but you're really not doing them, and you're not paying attention to the expectations one especially, which is why you end up in trouble in your marriages, because you either didn't cover the things that you needed to cover, or you didn't really pay attention to the red flags that were popping up in there, because you figured that, oh, well, you know, those are no big deal. Well, they're not a big deal if they happen once or twice, but they happen once or twice every month for 25 years, it might be a big deal. Because our tolerance levels tend to, you know, disappear on us. I mean, they just deteriorate away so we're not that tolerant over time. So, because sometimes a husband and wife be like, well, I don't understand why he's so mad or she's so mad. I mean, it was just this little thing. Yeah, but the little thing that you've been doing consistently for 20 plus years or whatever it is, that may drive somebody a little nutsy. But then I look at them and say, but you knew this from the beginning. Why'd you marry them? Well, I thought they would change. I thought, no, that's not, you know. Unless they offered to, that's not the right thing to be thinking. I mean, if it came up at the beginning and they said, I agree with you. My wife and I had a conversation before we got married. I've told you guys a story. We're sitting watching the sunset by the pool at the apartment complex that I was at. And she just looked at me and said, look, this is what I'm looking for. And if you're not all of this, just let me know now and don't waste my time. That's what she said. And I'm not even paraphrasing. That's what she said. Pretty much. And she had this list. It wasn't written down, but boy, she was like, boom, 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 ran off about 15 things. And I just looked at her and I straight up said, look, I could lie to you and say I'm all that, but I'm not. I said, but I like your list. It's a good list. I mean, I can see why that's your list. As a matter of fact, most of those things are on my list of things I'm working towards anyway. I said, now you could take that as a line or you could take it as the truth. I'm just telling you that I like your list and it's not just because it's your list. It's actually the things I'm working on also anyway. Now, if there were things on there that I just said, yeah, well, that's your list and I'm not in agreement with that, then you should not be upset with me if we get married and later that drives you crazy because you knew. But if you knew there was a problem, that person assured you they wanted to fix it, work on it, and find a way to straighten that aspect out, then you may give that person a shot because you had a conversation, you agreed. Because, you know, shockingly, I guess, or not so shockingly, you know, when she gave her list, there wasn't anything on it I disagreed with. And some of those things I already was. Some of them I wasn't. And I actually did really like the list, and they were part of my personal development goals. And so, but just the idea that she actually said all of that up front. She said, look, I'm not getting any younger and I don't need to waste time, you know, just social dating anybody. And I've told you, dating's not a social activity. So the whole only reason that we're dating at all is because I'm trying to figure out if I want to marry you and you're trying to figure out if you want to marry me. So let me tell you what I'm looking for. And if you're not all these things, tell me right now because that's my list. Which is where I guess the expectations exercise came from. The idea of, you know, kind of laying that all out there. This is the same thing in Scripture. It's using the husband-wife as an example, but this is the assembly Messiah expectation sheet. We can expect the Messiah to do certain things. He expects us to do certain things. The relationship is laid out in a very clear way. It's not complex. It's you trust me and obey. and I will take care of everything else. I mean, it's just as simple as that. But the trusting and obeying is tough for us because we don't trust easily. And we do have a rebellious streak, so we're not really good at obeying either, you know. We have a little bit of that self-sovereign problem. And then we get into all kinds of problems. So he says, as we're wrapping this all up for today, he says, this secret is great. This is a great secret. By great meaning, it is a big deal. He said, this is a big deal. He said, but I'm speaking concerning Messiah and the assembly. I know I've used, Paul's saying, look, I know I talked a lot about husbands and wives because you guys understand husbands and wives. Where they were coming from, they didn't understand Messiah and assembly. Remember, the Jewish community up to this point had been waiting for Messiah, had no experience with Messiah, and didn't really know exactly when. You ask a Jew today, they really don't know what Messiah will do when he gets here. They know that somehow it has to do with restoring Israel and, you know, ruling and reigning or something. They don't know, because most of that's not written in the Tanakh. It's written in the New. And a lot of it came from the Messiah himself. So here, Paul is trying to say, you guys don't really understand what this whole Messiah thing's all about and how you're supposed to relate to that. So I'm going to give you a metaphor you understand, husband and wife. And so you can then understand maybe both a little better, so you can do both better. So you can be a better member of the assembly, and you can be a better husband or wife. And so, and by the way, men, you need to learn the whole wife thing too, because after all, you're part of the bride. Because men, in the vertical, if you're in the lower part and whoever you're treating above, you need to treat like a wife would, trusting, obeying, submitting, reverencing, respecting. The attitude, the approach is the same. That's what we expect children to do with parents. Anybody in the below has to do the same exact thing to whoever's above them. You should be doing that to your employers. Supervisors, they are above you in that realm, in that area. And so they should be treated that way. And not only if they're perfect and great and wonderful and you like them. The position gets the respect. Which is why, you know, I try not to do anything to mock people like the president. And I'm 59 years old. I've seen a few of them. And I wasn't impressed with most of them. And they were both parties, okay? But the position deserves respect. It's a position of authority. Even if the person is acting disrespectfully. David shows you this when Saul is losing his mind and trying to kill him. He said, but he's the anointed king. I cannot disrespect the position, even though he literally is trying to kill me and he's out of his mind. And some of us may think our president is that way. Different, I don't mean just this one. I mean, any president we've had, you may think he's out of his mind and he's trying to kill us or whatever. You just may think whatever about somebody in authority. Because we've had lots of presidents people didn't like. Or thought were incompetent, or thought this, or thought that. But this is the position. It's still an authority position. And so we need to understand that we have to respect the position and treat the vertical structure correctly, because it's how we show Yahweh how we feel about him in the structure. Because structure is structure across the board. He says, this is a great secret, but I speak concerning Messiah and the assembly. However, you too, everyone, let each one love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she fears her husband. Now, that fear part is the same as what I taught in the fear of Yahweh. It's that awe and reverence is deep respect. Okay? So wives are to awe and reverence and have deep respect for their husbands. That's the kind of fear we're talking about. Not being necessarily physically afraid. But of course, if the husbands are loving their wives, then why wouldn't the wife have awe and respect for them? By loving the way Messiah loves. I don't mean just loving. Because a lot of you are married to men who love you. I mean, that's their emotion, is that they feel very strong, caring for you. But are they doing what Messiah does for the assembly? Are they providing the safety and provision that you need that you expect from that, from the vertical to do. The vertical is supposed to give you provision and safety. That's what structure brings. You know, my children expect that I will always keep them safe and also always make sure they have what they need. That's what they expect of a father. Keep them safe and make sure they have what they need. They should never worry about being hungry or worry about having anything that they need to have, clothing, shelter, etc., and that they're safe. And so we have to make, and so what a delight it is to work with my children when I know that they love me because they know that I love them. I get a very, very just emotionally strong response when I say, in terms of how much I appreciate when my children, the love they show for me, because I know I earned it. Because I do for them what I would have wanted done for me when I was a child. I mean, I'm still strong with my children. I know you can know that's true. Okay, I'm strong with them. But always from the top place where they know it's because I want them to be safe. And as they get older, I make sure that they understand why I'm being strong. I don't just say because I said so. That only works up to a certain age where they then want to understand and they should be able to understand. So you should explain yourself. Not argue with them, just explain. This is because I want to keep you safe and this is why. Or I think this is unwise or, you know, whatever. And so then the reciprocal response is tremendous when they know they're loved. Men, the reciprocal response you would get from your wives if they would only know that you love them. And part of loving them, you know, Yahweh says you were to have no other Elohim but him, right? Wives want you to have no other woman in your life but them. Actually, they'd like you to have no other thing in your life that is held in as high esteem as them. So if they feel for one second that they are not number one above everything in your life but the Creator himself, you're going to have a problem. And they should feel that. They should feel like they are the most important thing in your life. First in your thoughts, only second to Yeshua and the Father. There should be nothing in the below that gets your attention and holds your attention in a higher place of value than them. And if they, now you may feel all that, but if they don't feel it, it's of no use. You have to make sure that you're communicating it, that they feel it. Because when they feel it, there's nothing they wouldn't do for you. And so this is important. And again, all of this was to give us that solid foundation, the core, which is the husband, wife, and then the family. And then the family then understanding how that then fits into the assembly in Yeshua. So hopefully that makes some sense as we finish up chapter 5, and then we'll get into chapter 6 next time. Father, we come before you, and Father, we want to get this vertical thing right. We understand that you use, for us to understand you, the term Father. As a matter of fact, we know that next in chapter 6, it's going to start off with respecting your father and your mother. And so we understand just a little bit more today than we did before, hopefully, about structure, about your structure, and about what you desire from us and how we are to learn from the metaphor of the assembly and Messiah to match the husband and the wife. So, Father, help us to truly embrace this. Help us to then take this and apply it. For all husbands and wives that are listening, Father, I hope that you would, my prayer is that you would give them patience with each other and not use this as a weapon. You hear what Rabbi said? And then start, you know. Just all of you listening, Father, I pray that all that are listening will just own their part. Don't worry about the other person's part. Own your part. If you're not being the right type of wife, then fix it. If you're not being the right type of husband, then fix it. Wives, don't go in their faces. Men, don't get in your wives' faces. Work on you. Let the Father work on the rest. So, Father, I ask that you would give them patience and compassion and mercy and kindness to each other, and that most of all they would love one another as you love us, and that Father, that all would be done so that it be done to your glory and your honor. So, Father, we want to come now before you, trying to truly embrace how you see us and how we should see you in terms of the vertical structure, and ask that you would give us that opportunity, continuing to encourage us along the path so that we can one day hear the words, "Well done, you good and trustworthy servant. Enter into the joy of your master." So, Father, we thank you, praise you, and give you all glory and honor. In the name above all names, Yeshua our Messiah. Amen. Amen.